I will not make any deals with you. I've resigned. I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered. My life is my own.
I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sleepy Gilbert, and I am back in the chair.
You look like a new woman tonight.
I am. You know, 12 hours of sleep, do that for a person. And I want to thank my family for letting me get the rest I so needed. And thank you, Nicole, for sitting in the chair, and boy, she did a great job.
Didn't she?
She really did. Of course, you and I are always impressed with her, but we've heard from a number of our listeners. You know what? She seems to have impressed them as well.
You got several comments that said that hearing Nicole on the show last night gave them hope for the future.
So we get that hope every day.
We just have to figure out how to get her elected president in 2022.
I know. Well, we're working on that, folks.
Well, an interesting day in the news as we take a look at items dated March 10th, 2006.
I know. Not one news story, though, about it being the last day of the pitch-in supper here for the one-year anniversary of PID Radio. You think that would have been all over Fox News and, CNN?
Well, you know how it is. When you're the market leader, you don't ever, ever refer to the ones that are sneaking up behind you.
Well. Yeah.
So I'm sure that's what they're thinking.
They are so afraid of us.
Well, that was, you know, why they had the gas company come out and plant those listening devices.
And why the guy was at your office.
That's right. That's why we'll be searching for those listening devices all through the weekend. We got a good weather coming up, so we'll be out there with sniffer dogs and detectors, and we'll get the place cleaned up again.
Murphy's already on it. He's been out the front door a couple of times, and he's watered in exceptional places, and I'm thinking he's found a couple of, you know, suspicious spots. So.
Yeah, the moles are terrified of him. We have no moles around this house.
Not a mole in sight. Well, you know, you're right. The news does have lots of interesting things, and some of it is swirling around Jack Abramoff.
He really is showing a willingness to tell all that he knows. At least that's what it looks like so far.
It's like he's desperately trying to swing a deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it looks like there are quite a few people who are going to get hit with the shrapnel from this case exploding.
Yeah. In fact, I think Bush is going to have to duck.
I think you're right. News comes today that his Interior Secretary, Gail Norton, who's been with him for 5 years, is resigning as of today. That's according to the Associated Press, and she was, implicated in some influence peddling.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Abramoff apparently persuaded a couple of the Indian tribes that he was representing to donate to an ecological organization that she founded in exchange for some FaceTime. And that FaceTime was... apparently happened at a party that was thrown by the tax activist Grover Norquist, who's very tight with the Republican National Committee.
Mm-hmm.
So this is hitting right at the very top of the Republican Party.
It is. You know, I'm surprised that this doesn't lead every story, but what we continue to see is the ports thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll notice that if I'm reading these stories right regarding the Dubai ports deal, they have agreed to give up management of 6 of the 21 ports that they will now be in charge of, because I've only heard reference to 6.
Well, that's the way the story's been portrayed all the way along.
Yeah, I mean, I know, but are they giving up all of the U.S.
That's
ports?
A good question. I think that's one that needs to be that question that needs to be answered. I mean, not just asked. We need to get an answer to that question.
Well, my question is that why we only heard about the 6 all along?
You're just a step ahead.
Ah, honey. You were getting there. I know. I could tell.
Well, that's exactly right. It has been six ports in the news all the way along. Six ports. Northeast Intelligence Network went to Dubai Ports World's website.
Mm-hmm.
And so right there on the website, it says there are 21 American ports,
mm-hmm.
including the key ports at Beaumont and Corpus Christi, through which a lot of our military mm-hmm. hardware, like tanks and Bradleys, flow. That's where they ship out.
My question is, how many American ports are there altogether?
You know, I heard that number today. I think it's... No, I'm not going to guess. I heard the number today, and I wish I could remember it, and I can't.
More than 50?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a couple hundred, actually.
That have two syllables?
the number 258 comes to mind, but I don't know that that's correct.
Well, we'll have to look that up. But, yeah, it just really, it's curiouser and curiouser.
Yeah. So we will see what happens with that story, because... if they're out of the deal, how does that affect things? The other question I'd like to know the answer to is, why did they back out? Was this just a snit? We're going to take our marbles and go home?
Yes.
Or did somebody approach the Sheikh of Dubai privately? And Sheikh, it's Sheikh. And offered to cut a deal with Boeing for the big... airliner deal that's in the works.
Well, that's a good
question. Or some other commercial deal that we don't know about. The Boeing deal comes to light because it's pretty big. I mean, they just took a $10 billion order for 777s, and they're trying to, you know, land an even bigger deal for 787s, mm-hmm. competing against the French company Airbus.
Yeah.
And, you know, that makes the $23 million that Neil Bush got from the investors in Dubai look mm-hmm. like, you know, peanuts.
Yeah, look, it's not like we're trying to, you know, keep Boeing from making a buck. We've got friends that work at Boeing. It's just
sure.
that if you're getting these things through dishonest means, then mm-hmm. it's just wrong.
Yeah. And again, we know that there are people out there who claim and say that they believe that the UAE is America's friend in the Middle East. And we don't doubt that. We just don't think that key infrastructure should be in hands outside the United States. That's yeah. all there is to it. Now, I got an email about a week ago from a listener in Canada, and a good listener who's been listening for a long time, who said, you know, it almost sounds as though there's a double standard here, that it's okay for American companies to go buy up infrastructure in other parts of the world, but it's not okay when the shoe is on the other foot. And actually... And there may be many Americans who believe that that's okay. Frankly, I don't think Canada, for example, should be selling infrastructure to American companies.
No.
I think Canada should retain control over its ports, airport, seaport. I think they should control their border crossings. I don't think they should be selling, you know, major industries to American investors. I don't think that one of the biggest problems that we have in the Western Hemisphere, in Latin America and South America, in terms of the way people live, the standards of living in that part of the hemisphere,
mm-hmm.
is because policy is usually dictated by American companies that go in, pay off a few influential men, and then the country is basically run for the benefit of, say, U.S. fruit or Dole or somebody like that. So I don't think that the shoe should be on either foot.
You mean Dole, the fruit company, not Bob Dole?
Yes, correct.
I just wanted to make sure that everybody in the world who heard Dole, you know that we're not talking
yes.
about Bob Dole.
So I think that that the argument applies for you know, for other nations as well. And when it comes to American companies coming in and trying to buy them up, I don't you know, you should be in control of your own company's, your country's infrastructure.
Oh, I agree with that. But you know, the argument there will be, well, it's a global economy.
Well, and there's an interesting article that I saw a link to. I almost posted it to Watcher magazine last night, but it's a couple of weeks old. But it is significant because it comes from the president, the current president of the CFR, and this was in some Taiwan newspaper about 2 weeks ago. But that's essentially the argument that he makes, that national sovereignty, as we know it, and not just in the United States, but worldwide, mm-hmm. needs to be redefined. And the take that the way I took the article was that it should be redefined so that international businesses like Dubai Ports World or Boeing
mm-hmm.
can do business across national borders more easily.
I agree with that. I would argue that we do have a one world government, and it's economic in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Because businesses have less and less loyalty to a home country.
That's very true. That's very true. And we see that here in the United States as we watch our manufacturing base shipped offshore because goods can be made more cheaply elsewhere and shipped to the United States than we can produce them here. And the fact is that most of us Americans, while we're complaining about losing our manufacturing jobs, turn around and go shopping at Wall of China Mart so we can buy our cheap shoes and our cheap electronics. You know, so it's we're shooting ourselves in the feet. And, of course, the oligarchs, the international business owners who wield the most influence in the government want it that way.
Yeah.
Because the bottom line is their bottom line. There is very little national loyalty when it comes to
Well, that is the truth. Now, before we go on to the next story, I want to bring something up that is going to feel like it's a left turn. But it really is related in a way. much like things on our
wall of paranoia
are related. If anyone listening has information about what I'm about to discuss, I'd love to hear from you. Back in 1988, in the Straits of Hormuz, the USS Vincennes shot down Iran Air Flight 655, killing 290 people, claiming that they thought that this was an enemy plane. This was during the Iran-Iraq War.
Right.
This was very close to the United Arab Emirates. That's why I'm bringing this up now.
Right.
I just wonder if our relationship with the UAE goes way, way back. Because this was 1988. That was the very tail end of the Reagan presidency. We were not happy with Iran. Iran-Contra was all over the place. Had been for a while. Supposedly Reagan was starting to fade.
Yeah.
Maybe not really hands-on president anymore. So I think it's safe to say that Bush Sr. was really in charge.
Sure.
I'd really like to know how deep these roots go and what the real story behind the shooting of this airplane, what that real story is. Because there, it's this, if you read the story, it's this cascade of mistakes that all led to shooting down this plane.
And there should be a lot of fail safes built in to make it impossible for things like this to happen. There should be transponders on those commercial jetliners.
There was a transponder, and it was squawking, and it was supposedly squawking in mode 3, which is, if I remember correctly, mode 3 was sending the signal, I'm a commercial flight. Mode 2 would have been danger. Leave me alone. I'm a warrior. Supposedly they were squawking correctly. The Vincennes either misunderstood that or deliberately just ignored that. That was just one of the problems. Also, the visual ID on the radar. They couldn't seem to get it out of their minds that this was not a commercial, that this was not an enemy plane. Somehow it was misidentified. Also, the plane was going up. They claimed it was diving toward them. These are things that seem odd.
Yeah.
But when you add them all up, it just seems to me like it was just this horrifying series of bad decisions on the part of the captain. Because the captain, at one point, had to make the decision. Okay, let's fire on that plane.
Right.
Which they did, and the plane crashed, and everyone died.
Yeah, almost 300 people.
Including some Americans.
Yeah, that is interesting because that's a story that, well, I wasn't, frankly, I wasn't paying that much attention to the news back in those days. So, yeah, until you reminded me about this the other night, I'd completely forgotten about it. It is, well, it's a story like that KAL, Korean Airlines flight 007 that was shot down by the Russian jet.
Right. It's very similar to that. And there are, there is a speculation out there that the Lockerbie tragedy, the flight that was shot down.
Right, the Pan
Lockerbie,
Am flight that went down over.
That Iran contributed to that in retaliation for Flight 655.
That's interesting. Of course, we also read the online book, The Last Circle, by Sherry Seymour, which is a pen name. And she goes into some detail about the Lockerbie bombing and actually lays it on Syria.
Well, exactly. But supposedly Iran actually, you know, contributed, whether it was financially or sent some people over but that, or they may have even supposedly masterminded.
Well, yeah. According to Sherry Seymour, it was to silence a couple of American DEA agents who were flying back to the United States with evidence of the drug running.
Well, that's my other question. There were some Americans on this plane, on Iran Flight 655. Who were they?
That's a good question.
That's the other thing. You know, when we're peering into darkness and a plane is shot down, especially mistakenly shot down, or flies into a mountain during perfect weather, and they say, oh, it's really foggy that day. And then you find out it was beautiful and clear.
Yeah, like the,
Ron Brown story. Exactly. You have to ask yourself who was on that plane.
Exactly. Who was on that plane and what might he have known that
or
others or she that people didn't want to get out? Well, the speculation about the KAL Flight 007 was that a United States congressman named Larry McDonald, who was on that flight, very powerful, who essentially had his own private intelligence force that he'd set up through the John Birch Society. And there's some questions about what he might have been involved in and what he might have known that led to that plane being taken down. There's also some question as to whether the plane was actually shot down or whether it was forced down and then sort of made to disappear. So there, there are a lot of these things that sort of happen. And when the media is in the control of a relatively small number of media companies, it's a lot easier to squash big stories like this. How many people really heard about that story at LAX in the fall with that shoulder-fired missile that narrowly missed that plane?
Oh, yeah. When you look at that radar, it's amazing. It's so clear that something came up and hit
it. But it only appeared on one one story that we could find on the internet, which was that KYW, which is a news radio station in Philadelphia, had it on its website from an AP report, but nowhere else. And then it disappeared. We've seen other things like that, too, that we notice from time to time, like in Iowa, the doctor who's like in charge of vaccines or infectious diseases in Iowa, and I can't think of the name of the anyway, she's with the state health department in Iowa, and she basically said that there'd been a surplus of flu vaccine 2 years ago when we were supposedly having a huge shortage.
I remember
Patricia
that.
Quinlisk is her name, and we quoted that story from MSNBC. Within a week, that story had disappeared. And coming from her, it should have carried some weight because not only is she like the state's top health official in the state of Iowa, but she is also on the editorial board of the official publication of the CDC or something like that. So, I mean, she's obviously got credentials.
She's got chops.
But she spoke out of turn.
Well, you know, it's really sad to see, but that you're right. The news, the days of the freelance reporter or even the reporter who works for an agency and is out there digging, those days are starting to slip away from us.
If they ever truly existed.
Yeah, more and more we're finding that, you know, I hate to say this, but there are only a few agencies out there, at least the primary ones, that most of the American media at least use. And I think all too often it's somebody sitting in an office who's just making some phone calls.
Yeah, that could very well be. And then as we reported a couple of weeks ago, the National Security Agency has those contracts with AP and Reuters.
Exactly. That's the other thing.
And what exactly are they doing there?
Just getting a press release and then putting their names on it. Well,
sure.
You know what? For those who are out there digging, God bless you, because I know that there are still some genuine journalists out there, genuine investigative reporters who are out there digging for the truth. And God bless you. Let's see. We got another story here. Besides Abramoff, you know, this story about the church arson, really, this is a story that's likely to disappear. The three young men who were arrested for burning down the churches.
Right.
They've been accused with that. Well, they have been talking And apparently they say that they belong to a satanic Christian group.
Satanic Christian group.
It's nothing ritualistic, one of them said. It's about the pursuit of knowledge. Now, does that sound familiar? Mm-hmm. He explained to me that there can be satanic Christians.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are probably some people who believe that that's true. I think that they're, well, but frankly, I don't grasp it.
Well, what's interesting is young boy goes on to say, Burgess goes on to say, let me just quote the whole paragraph. Burgess said, Dubusque, now I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right or not, D-E-B-U-S-K, so hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, told him last summer that he'd found a new religious interest. This is one of the other of the three. He wasn't raised as a Christian, and he never found any kind of religion to settle down with, Burgess said. He thought he'd found something that worked for him. It's not worshiping the devil. It's nothing ritualistic. It's about the pursuit of knowledge. He explained to me that there can be satanic Christians. It gave him the peacefulness and serenity of Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real peaceful thing. And apparently Burgess said that Dubusque invited him to go out demon hunting.
Yeah. And they were demon hunting by going out and torching churches.
Well, I don't know if they were demon hunting on the nights that they were doing this, but I find this whole story really interesting because quite a number of churches on different nights were torched. And either these guys were splitting up or they're not the only ones involved.
Mm.
Because I remember one of the very early fireman who went to church, that this was his church that burned down.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about the distance between the incident sites. And he said that in the fog that had been in that area the night before, and the distance, the speed at which you would have had to drive to get from one point to another in the time frame when the fires began, made it impossible for the same person or persons to have torched each site.
So we may be dealing with a larger group than what we
possibly
think right now.
And when these guys are talking about a satanic Christian organization,
mm-hmm.
this sounds like something we really need to keep an eye on. Mm-hmm. We may need to pull Russ Dizdar in on this one.
Yeah, yep. Well, speaking of satanic and ritual implications for cases, the Hosanna Church case is back in the news this week, and prosecutors down in Louisiana are saying that they may be able to get this case to court sometime in 2006. This was the story that popped up last year down in Louisiana, where the pastor of the church and eight other members have been accused of sexually abusing children and animals. Mm-hmm. And a fair amount of ritualistic paraphernalia was recovered as well. But when it came time for the grand jury to hear the evidence, the police backed off on the ritual charges, you know, even though they had, well, there were a number of reports coming out in the early days about,
cauldron?
No, not the cauldron.
He's doing a stirring motion.
The big circle with the star in the middle, the pentagram on the floor of the church. Yeah, it's a Friday afternoon, late.
Sounds like he's doing charades.
Blood sugar dropping. So even though they had the evidence of the ritual aspects of the case, I mean, what other reason do you have for abusing a cat? Apparently that is not going to be part of the trial. And there's some other strange things here. For example, initially the law enforcement official said that there might be as many as 100 victims involved. But at this point now that they've presented the evidence to the grand jury and gotten indictments, they've only identified three. So,
yeah, you've been reading on this story. I really haven't kept up with it the way you have. What is your gut feeling? Is this a church where there was a well-meaning pastor who was trying to exorcise demons?
No.
Or was this someone who was exorcising satanic intent upon these people?
That's the sense that I get from the articles that I've read. In fact, the pastor went into the police and turned himself in. but it had been a church that he assumed control of from his father, who'd been the pastor there for many years, an independent Christian church called the Hosanna Church in Ponchatoula Parish. Mm. And stories started to come out, you know, after he turned himself over to police, and they started investigating and found other members of the church who had apparently been involved in this as well.
And 100 victims, that's a lot.
That is a lot of victims. But essentially what had happened is that this church had just somehow fallen under the sway of this pastor who was engaging in ritualistic abuse of children and animals. To what end, we don't know. And again, this seems to be a media, not blackout entirely, but they seem to be really trying to downplay the occult aspects of the story.
That's very fishy. You'd think that they'd be playing it up.
You would think
because
so.
Because the perpetrator is a clergyman. You'd think they'd be playing this up.
You would think so. But again, that's an aspect of that story in Toledo, Ohio, that you don't hear that much about either. Father Gerald Robinson, who was accused or charged with the murder of a nun years and years ago. And his arrest only came about last year after some women, after many years, came out and went to police and said, you know, we were abused in a ritual fashion by a number of priests in the Toledo, Ohio area years ago. And again, the media is not really examining that aspect of it because, as we talked about before, it seems that there's this predisposition in our society to disbelieve this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this kind of thing doesn't happen. And if somebody says it does, that person is either deluded or sick.
Well, I'm going to step onto my conjecture box here. And I have, of course, put my shiny tinfoil hat upon my head.
Very fetching.
Well, thank you, honey. And all you listeners, I would advise that you put your tinfoil hat upon your head, too, but make sure there's no potato salad in it, because during this week of our pigeon supper, we've had a lot of tinfoil over nice dishes. Perhaps there is more than meets the eye to these pastors. In other words, could it be, as a writer of fiction, mm-hmm. I would look at this and think, maybe these guys were programmed. And the programmers don't want anyone to look very deeply into these stories.
When you start investigating and reading into cases like this, and William Kennedy said this too, when he was looking into the pedophile case in Belgium mm-hmm. with Marc Dutroux and the powerful members, many of whom were connected to the Bilderberg, regular Bilderberg attendees
right.
in one way or another, that you would often find a dead end where the press just wasn't willing to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the case here. And this Hosanna Church is an example of what may be happening, where you get the initial rush of information as things are coming out before the situation is contained. And once the word gets out, you know, hey, we've got a problem in Louisiana, you know, whoever mm-hmm. is in charge of cleaning up these messes, word gets out and suddenly prosecutors are told to go easy on certain aspects of a case, or the police are told not to investigate certain areas of the case, or the reporters, many of whom have a naturalistic bias anyway. Mm-hmm. In other words, they don't believe in the supernatural.
Right.
Don't report on it unless it's to make somebody look deluded.
Well, and that's what makes no sense about it. You know, it seems like an ideal time to
right.
play up clergy bad, church bad.
Yeah.
Christians bad.
Well, you know, if it was just a – and they can do that actually with just the child abuse aspect. I mean, that's horrifying enough.
Yeah.
They don't need to go into the satanic aspect to do that. And so the child abuse aspect, those are the charges that will be filed. The occult aspect is probably not going to make it into court based on what was said by the police at the grand jury. So, you know, we'll see how this goes. I mean, you look at what happened with Richard Hamlin out in California in his trial when he tried to bring the satanic ritual abuse aspect into the case out there. The press was very negative. And he wound up getting a guilty conviction on the charge of, it was a relatively new law in California, torture, I think, which carries with it a mandatory life sentence without parole. And
yeah.
the jury was not instructed of that.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of the occult and things like that, we often talk about numbers.
Yes.
And how numbers can be signals. Mm-hmm. And we just a couple of days ago talked about how the number 13 shows up in stories a lot.
Yep.
Well, today and yesterday, 13 was in a headline.
Mm-hmm.
And I posted those partly because the story I thought was worthy, but also because 13 was in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday's headline was Turkish River Bus Plunge Kills 13.
Mm-hmm.
Today's headline, Iraq Hangs 13 for Insurgency Role.
Mm-hmm.
It just amazes me how often 13 is the number.
And you may think we're exaggerating this, but if you go to Google News, or again, as we said the other night, go to any news search engine and just punch in the number 13. Just search for the number 13,
mm-hmm.
or even creepier, 13 dead.
Yeah, I think 13 dead is the way to go.
And you will be amazed at how many stories from how many different parts of the world pop up with that headline. Now, we've not done a scientific study on this
have to check the other numbers too, yeah. But we do know that 13 is a powerful number.
Yeah, and it does pop up quite often.
Not to us. It's powerful to the occult. So,
right.
Or they think it is.
Well, one other interesting story, bringing this full circle back around to the Republican Party and the current administration. This was a website that's devoted to, it was reported by the National Journal, but it was reported in a daily news site devoted to government employees,
mm-hmm.
About the appointment of a 28-year-old to a key Homeland Security position. Now, this is a 28-year-old whose experience was pretty much limited to setting travel appointments for the president and drawing a $30,000 a year salary. In Washington, D.C., that doesn't go very far, by the way.
No.
That might sound like
that's
grunt work, yeah. So this 28-year-old young man, who I'm sure is a dedicated, hardworking individual.
Well, the fact is, to even be have a grunt job in Washington,
you've got to be a go-getter, right. But he's been appointed to a position where he's going to serve as the executive director of the Homeland Security Advisory Committees.
Mm-hmm.
He will gather expert advice, quoting now, on behalf of the president and the Homeland Security Secretary, end quote, from 20 other advisory boards, and then pass along those recommendations. Now, he doesn't have any experience in law enforcement, in security, in military, intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Political science major, though.
Political science.
Has that
background.
Going for him.
And, of course, there's that job as the travel arranger.
Well, that takes a lot of arranging skills.
Yes. He's the loan arranger.
He is.
So it just makes you step back and say, okay, what's the deal here?
I want to know, did he ever organize a horse show? Because that's where you get your experience.
Huh? That's it.
Well, this does smack of Michael Brown.
It does.
Michael Brown nosing.
Yeah, more likely.
She says, making a face. Ooh.
Yeah. Well, he's been working at that job for about the last 3 years because he was quoted he was interviewed by the Des Moines Register a few years ago in this mm-hmm. position. And now he's back and he's put in this position of collecting and gathering key information and advice from committees that are devoted to improving Homeland Security. We pray he does well, but we just have to question the judgment and wisdom of this particular appointment.
Well, speaking of appointments, we have an appointment to watch a really good movie. I watched it earlier today, and I highly recommend, if you have not seen The Island, go out and rent it. Or if you have digital video on demand or any of those services where you can just download it to your digital video box, do it, because this is a great movie. Ewan McGregor, who else did I say was in that?
The guy who played Neelix in Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah, Neelix. He's so cool. He is so cool. This is a great cast. Sean Bean from Lord
yes.
of the Rings.
Uh-huh.
The one who was in the man who wasn't there, who played the girl. She was also in The Girl with a Pearl Earring.
Anyway, Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett mm-hmm. Johansson. Thank you very much. I'll tell you what. She does a great job. It is a fantastic movie. I don't even want to say what it's about because I really don't want to spoil it for you. But just let's say that it falls right in line with things we talk about on this show.
Okay.
I'll give you that teaser.
The Island, huh?
The Island. You've got to watch it. It is so worth it. And I will tell you this. I was weeping at the end.
Ooh.
Yep.
They don't run into Patrick McGoohan on the island, do they?
You know, that's the only thing I thought about. And we're going to wake up on the island one of these days, too. We're end up with a reading education.
Yeah, that's right. Well, in your face, number six.
Well, everybody, this has been a great anniversary week. We've enjoyed all of the pitch and supper contributions. The lemonade was fabulous. The potato salad couldn't have been
fried
better.
Fried chicken. Yes,
I mean,
wonderful
fried
stuff.
Chicken. And the pies.
Mm, yes.
And the cakes.
Yes.
But the pies are square. It's those cakes that are round. Well, listen, everybody, thank you for joining us this week. We look forward to next week, and we are going to be presenting Mr. Tom Horn next
yes,
week.
Yes, we got an excellent interview with Tom, and we're going to tackle a topic that may be a little ouchy to some Christians, but we think it's an important one. We're going to talk about dominionism or kingdom now theology and why it poses such a danger to Christianity and American Christians in particular.
Well, it's Tom Horn with us, and we're going to be with Tom Horn. He's filling in Steve Quayle next week on Wednesday evening. We're going to join him on the Steve Quayle Show for an hour, and that's going to be at 4 Pacific time, or is that Mountain Time?
That's 4 Pacific, 6 Central, 7 Eastern, midnight Greenwich Mean Time. So if you're in London, at the stroke of midnight, we'll be live on the air. Satellite, shortwave, and on the internet.
That's right. So let's...
We're a triple threat.
Yeah. Oh, man, what a week. Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us. We are going to be having a great weekend. Go rent the island. This is Sharon Gilbert.
I'm Derek Gilbert. Thanks for listening to PIB Radio.
Bye, everybody. Gonna step up to the microphone.